Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
This is the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by our friends at Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair in Regina at 2330 7th Avenue. Good gang, headed up by Alan Mann over there, who's a community-minded guy that likes to grow business and grow the game of football. And I'm joined by longtime outstanding journalist of the Leader Post, Rob Vanstone. How's that for an introduction?
Well, long time equals old, but I will still accept the compliment with more grace than I'm usually capable of managing. Thank you for the kind words.
Tell you what, Rob Vanstone does a great job. I love reading his stuff each and every week for sure. Okay, Rob, let's give your synopsis of the 2017 Saskatchewan Rough Riders in a Cole's Notes, in a Vanstone version.
Oh, boy, I'm used to writing in paragraphs. It's tough for me to be called Cole's Notes-ish. Very good season. Could have been historic.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Christian Jones punt return. 2:44 left in the East Final. 3rd and 5. If they stop the Toronto Argonauts there, we're talking about what happened in the Grey Cup. And when you look at how the Rough Riders played against the Calgary Stampeders the two times they met in 2017, Calgary didn't score an offensive didn't score a touchdown against them. Or in the last two times the teams met, mm-hmm. Calgary didn't score an offensive touchdown against them. It looked like very much like Chris Jones solved the Stampeders. Given the Stampeders' propensity for collapsing in big games and the Rough Riders' success in figuring out the Stampeders, I wouldn't have bet against the Rough Riders doing just Calgary what Toronto did.
Yeah, when you think about it, Rob, and we talked about it on our call-in show after the game, you know, if I told you at the start of the year you'd be 5 yards away from covering a team in the Grey Cup, you'd say you're crazy.
I wouldn't have imagined it, and I think that's something it's important to note, and something that I should probably note with more clarity. I thought they were going to take some steps.
Mm-hmm.
I figured they'd be hovering around 500, and I guess 10-8 is is within the parameter of hovering. I didn't see them getting that close to a Grey Cup. The West Division looked too formidable to me to think that the Rough Riders were going to be able to come out of that division, and you just figured, well, okay, if you got to cross over, it's not going to be that huge of a success, but I think on the whole, the season was a success, but with as close as they got, I think there already has to be an appetite for seeing how this team is going to do next year, because they've set the table for themselves quite nicely.
Yeah, they've got an athletic team that likes to, as I like to say, run on your chest. They like to demonstrate that they're very athletic and very sure-tackling, aggressive defense for sure. But it all starts with the quarterback position. Look into your crystal ball, Mr. Rob Vanstone. Where do you see that quarterbacking situation shaking down next year? Is Brandon Bridge the guy? Will both guys be back? Can they bring Kevin Glenn back in order to let, you know, can they bring him back, or do they have to kind of remove him to allow Bridge to breathe as the starter?
Well, Kevin Glenn's the last guy who's going to be disruptive. I think he can handle any role that he is given. So I don't think there's that concern. I think the Rough Riders want Kevin Glenn back, but I'm not sure that there's a real difference in them wanting saying they want Kevin Glenn back and in them saying a year ago that they wanted Darian Durant back. Of course they do, but at what price? And I think that's going to be part of the discussion too, because you can't pay Kevin Glenn even what he made this season and still allow room for the quarterbacking situation to grow with younger players. Brandon Bridge, if he stays here, it's going to be at a higher salary than he commanded last year. And if the rules change to allow a Canadian quarterback to be classified as a national when he's on the field, how much does the value soar? We've never seen that scenario before with free agency and with that exemption. So he could be a free agent that a lot of teams cover, and the Rough Riders may have to pay that going rate, an elevated rate, if he is to return. And there's always the James Franklin discussion that probably won't go away till February.
How do you feel about that? I think you add a nice little element to that that talk about the Canadian quarterback and the monetary value of having a Canadian at the quarterback position, if it is in fact deemed a Canadian position or a Canadian playing that position. How do you feel about that? I think it's long overdue. If you're Canadian, you're Canadian, right?
I love it. I can't believe that in a game that is in a league that is known as the Canadian Football League, that a Canadian could ever be placed in a disadvantageous position, or that a team wouldn't be rewarded for starting a Canadian. You can start a Canadian at, let's say, wide side, wide out, and throw him way over to the side, not even look at him, and you get credit for that. But if you use a Canadian in the most important position in the game, you don't receive credit for that. It seems to me like such a contradiction, and I hope and trust that's something that Randy Ambrosi and associates are going to look at this season in reverse. At the very least, a quarterback should be classified as a Canadian if he's in the game. I mean, you look at earlier this year, and Brendan Labatt was hurting, and they had some injury issues with that were impacting the ratio, and Brandon Bridges in the game, and the Riders don't get any credit for that. And they're playing a Canadian quarterback. It is so contradictory. They have to look at that rule. I presume they will.
Yeah, ludicrous. Rob Vanstone of the Regina Leader Post, joining me here on the Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. Just a couple more minutes with Rob. Okay, Rob, I want to get to that whole Canadian thing and how we really get the Canadian game going at the grassroots level in terms of the media coverage. But when you're looking at this league and you're looking at the health of the league, how do you feel about the league right now? I know we're talking about adding Halifax down the road, and that would be great. And hopefully Toronto can capitalize on this remarkable and, unbelievable Grey Cup run with Mark Trestman and Jim Popp. But in terms of interest, but how do you feel about the health of the league and how things are going?
It's never going to be perfect. I mean, I've watched this league with a lot of interest since 1971. You weren't even alive.
True.
So it's been a while. And
do you ever look good for an old guy, by the way?
Well, I have a team of makeup artists and plastic surgeons. The okay. Botox is kicking in. But,
okay, Beyonce, keep going.
But I think it's as healthy as it's going to be. I mean, I remember the telethon eras. There was a telethon in 87. There was a telethon in 97. There was some sort of a tickathon in the 1993 season leading up to the game against Sacramento. In the early 60s, the franchise almost died. I mean, there have been various times when the Rough Riders' future has been imperiled, and there's been times when it looked like the whole league was going to go down. You go back to I was thinking about this during the most recent Grey Cup when it was snowing. Well, the last time it snowed that much during a Grey Cup was 96, and when Hamilton in Hamilton, and people thought that was going to be the last game in the history of the league.
Mm-hmm, that's right. I mean,
you're not that far removed from the whole league being in question. So when you compare it to that, it's about as healthy as I think this league's going to get. But you always wonder about BC with the ownership situation, with the seeming fan indifference. You wonder, as stable as Calgary is, if this stadium issue keeps going and going, how does that affect how they can operate? Mm-hmm. Montreal, unless they can turn things around on the field, you wonder what kind of market that is going to be down the road. And Toronto, if they can't capitalize on the Grey Cup victory this year, will that market ever be able to grow? Yeah. But overall, it's healthy. They've got the TSN deal that nobody could have imagined 20 years ago, and that basically covers the payroll, the player payroll every year for each team. So it's a lot healthier than it used to be, and maybe more healthy than it's ever been. But there's still some trouble spots. I think as long as the CFL exists, there'll be some areas you can point to and say, well, maybe that could improve.
Daron Carter back with the Riders next year, or is he in the NFL?
I would suspect he'd be back here. I think it is a situation here that in which he's very comfortable. He's taking fans to movies. Yeah. I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah.
There's probably more theaters to go to in bigger centers in the United States, but I wouldn't be surprised if he looks around the National Football League. But he's 27 years old next year. Had a look-see in the NFL a few years back. He's talked about the politics of the game in the NFL, and it doesn't really seem, at least based on what he said, that there's a voracious appetite to go down there. So if you look at the Canadian Football League, what's the best place for him? Mm. The Rider Nation embraced him like he's never been embraced before as a professional football player. He, in turn, embraced it. I think he had a great relationship with Chris Jones. Chris Jones demonstrated that he can handle Daron Carter and did so adeptly all year. I think if he comes back to the CFL, this is the place he's going to be, and I would suspect that he's back in the league. I hope he's back. I think in the right situation, he's the kind of guy who can put up 1,500, 1,600, 1,700 receiving yards.
How do we grow this game amateur-wise? How do we make the Vanier Cup a big deal? How do we make the Rams a big deal, the Thunder? I know we'll never have 33,000 coming out to these games, but we got to be able to. Let's take Regina, for example. The Rams have a decent team. They've got the Heck Crichton Trophy winner, the best player in university football, and they're playing in the best stadium in Canada. They get 1,500, 2,000 fans. How can we make this bigger? Does that make you scratch your head too?
That is a perennial puzzler to me, Ballsy. I don't expect the Rams to get the kind of crowds that they got in the first ever game at Mosaic Stadium. That's a one-off, but you use the Regina Pats as a barometer. Why can't they get at least a Regina Pats crowd for four regular season home games? Why can't they get 5,000 or 6,000 people per game? That to me would, especially in a football crazed market. Is this a rider crazed market or is a football market? I would tend to think, based upon the Rams crowds, that it's more of a rider town than a football town. Despite the fact that the developmentally, when you look at what Regina Minor Football is doing, you look at the success that the Regina Thunder has, you look at the success that the Regina Riot has enjoyed, a phenomenal program, and you look at the Rams with Noah Pickton, Nick Cross, Nicholas Daly, Atlee Simon, Mitch Pickton. They've got two alumni, or they got four alumni in the National Football League.
Yeah.
When you look at the success that amateur football and minor football's had in Regina and the inroads that it's made there, why hasn't it manifested more in terms of attendance at Rams games? That just puzzles me. I don't get it at all, and I probably never will, Ballsy.
And I'm a Ram alumni, and I love the team, as you know, but I think when we talk about the Rams, I think it has to do with, if you don't make it a big deal, people won't think it's a big deal. But I just find that's our mentality in the media. I find it's, and I know you cover amateur sports, but I'm just talking in general. In the media, with fans, it's almost like we'd rather watch a guy come up here that we don't know about from Lakeland, Florida, but we won't spend $20 to go watch one of our own from Lakewood, Regina, or Bethune, or something. It's almost like that defeatist mentality. Well, he can't be that good. He's from Canada. He's from Regina.
It really is silly, that whole mindset. I mean, how many times did you hear, in reference to the Tragically Hip, and maybe a musical analogy doesn't fit here, but, well, they never made it big in the States. Or how many times have you heard it with respect to Jan Arden? Mm-hmm. Who cares? Celebrate your own. Why do you need that validation from the United States? Or why do you presume that the United States is automatically better? Vince Young comes in here, a 34-year-old washed-up quarterback, and there's massive interest. I wish as many people were talking about Noah Pickton. That's one of the most amazing athletes we're ever going to see in this city, in amateur sport. Heck Crichton winner. It's just an amazing, amazing athlete to watch and an amazing person to deal with. And if you can't get 5,000 or 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 people out to watch Noah Pickton,
yeah,
when are you ever going to?
Amen, brother. I've said that about Noah Pickton. Now, what hurts him in terms of going to the next level is his size, but I think the guy thinks the game like nobody else, maybe even at the pro level, and he's got great anticipation with his throws. But I look at, I hear this, well, we bring Vince Young, and what does it cost us? It's just a flyer, no big deal. Well, what about developing a guy like Mason Nias up in Saskatoon from Regina at the U of S? He's on campus. He can go to training camp with you 3 or 4 years in a row. The kid's got a rocket arm. He knows the game. What do you always hear about these guys when they come up here? Well, he's got to learn the game, the 22nd clock, the extra guy. These kids have been doing it their whole lives. Why don't we take a flyer on them? How about can you imagine the third jerseys, the third string quarterback jerseys and the tickets you'd sell if Noah Pickton or Mason Nias made that team?
Well, absolutely. And to me, it maybe goes back to what I was saying earlier about Brandon Bridge and the rules that have almost prohibited or certainly dissuaded Canadian teams from looking at Canadian quarterbacks. It's like they don't really protect or celebrate their own when it comes to that position. They've got that developmental spot at training camp that they can use. Often it's sort of a token spot. But let the Canadian quarterback, treat him the same as you treat the Canadian slot back, and maybe you'll have opportunities arising for Canadian players, because the coaches, who are predominantly American, will then have an incentive to give the Canadian quarterback a fair shot. as opposed to saying, well, maybe you can play slot back. Maybe you can play DB.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Especially a quarterback named like Noah Pickett, who has just fought the game at an advanced level as long as he's been playing it. And nothing is going to phase him. There's no acclimatization period as far as the nuances of the game, as far as the motion, as far as the extra defensive back, etc. He should be a step ahead, not a step behind, when you look at the progression toward the pros.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, and I'm just going to go leave you on this little cheap shot. Eli Manning, the next quarterback, your Denver Broncos, or what?
Oh, I'll take Archie Manning right now, Paul. Manning. Give me anything. I'd love to see it. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Peyton Manning was a once-in-a-lifetime type scenario, but I'm still kind of hoping that it happens. But if it does, please get him an offensive line that can keep him upright. Yeah. That's the whole issue in Denver.
I love this guy, Rob Vanstone, Regina Leader Post, a great guest on Growing the Game. Thanks for this, Rob.
Oh, thanks for your time, Walter. Take care.
This is the Growing the Game podcast, and we're pleased to be joined by the head coach of the University of Saskatchewan Husky, Scott Flory, nicely through his first season as head coach. Obviously, in the one loss column, it didn't go the way you wanted. Scott, just let's get your overall thoughts on your first season on the bench there.
Yeah, it was overall, I'm never really, I guess, happy. I always want to be better with everything, but from a learning standpoint and a transition standpoint, I think it was good, just given the fact that our staff had just a couple months to prepare and to try and get to know the players and try to instill the schematics and also the cultural stuff within the locker room and within the team, the expectations that we had. So, we learned a lot, though, as a group, as a staff. There's no doubt about it, and we're going to be better for it moving forward.
I want to get into what you think you learned in your first year, but I wanted to ask you this. How much was the late start? How much of a hamper was that? How much did that hamper you in your first year?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to make excuses for anything. It was just, it was a quick transition for us, just to be able to, our coaches, we came in and we actually met the first time as a staff really all together for 3 days there in May, and then never really got back together until August. We were together as a staff, but we never had that one-on-one time with our players at all throughout the summer, just to get to know them, get to know the personalities. So, like I said, having this whole off season for us is going to be really, really big. Where the kids are actually in school, we see them daily. we've got the opportunity to instill the cultural beliefs and the things that we want to do as a football team moving forward. And that's going to be really big for us this offseason.
Scott Flory joining us, head coach of the U of S Huskies. Now, Scott, what was the eye-opener for you as a head coach? I know you were there as an assistant coach and, of course, a very accomplished professional football player. But for you, what was the eye-opener as a head coach maybe?
Yeah, I think in my previous role as a coordinator, you're worried about first downs. You know what I mean? Like, you're worried about scheme and you're worried about first downs as a head coach. You've got everything on your plate, as well as the admin side of things. And there is an intensive amount of admin part of it. And it's all an adjustment period. And as well as being able to find the balance between doing that and making sure that you've got enough attention and input on the details of the scheme of coaching your football team and not getting lost in admin and all the other stuff and meetings and all the other stuff that that goes on outside of actually coaching football. And so that's an adjustment for sure. And for our staff, just as our staff growing together and getting to know how the styles in which each other coach, individually, each one of our staff members is a phenomenal coach, and as us to grow together as a staff, we did throughout the year. And like I said, we're only going to be better for moving forward.
Okay, I asked you this at the start of the year, and maybe it's changed, and you talked about cultural belief. What does a Scott Flory U of S Husky team, what do you want it to look like going into year two? Like, what kind of things are you going to hang your hat on?
Yeah, that's a good question, Michael. I think that, I think I saw some things in what we wanted to instill, and that was compete level. We were never down and out in any one of the games we played in. We were competitive and we competed to the final whistle. I think that we learned a lot of physically where we need to be as a group to compete with the top teams, not only in our conference, but also, I mean, we played an exhibition game versus a very good football team in McMaster, and just physically where we need to be with that, as well as developing our depth. I mean, we had injuries that ended up being catastrophic for us, and that shouldn't happen with a football team. Every team goes through injuries, and every team we've got to build that base and that depth. But our football team moving forward, competitive, high energy, physical football team, that is dynamic in the scheme, and I don't think that's a problem with us. We just got to have a better understanding of our scheme and play with that level of physicality that we need to compete with the best teams in the country.
How will recruiting be different for Scott Flory this year as it was opposed to getting a late start last year? Because obviously that did kind of hamper you. Not this season, because recruiting usually takes a couple of years to find out how it went. But how will recruiting be different for you this year?
Yeah, no, we obviously got a little bit earlier start. I only really had one guy signed after I was named because everything was done at that point. Mm-hmm. So I was able to land Nelson Lacombe, who's a huge addition for us, started every game for us, and is going to be a phenomenal player moving forward. But for us, the focus was really on the next year. And I'm learning a lot about that, about just contacting young athletes and exactly, what they're looking for. At the end of it, I think it's no different than just being with people. You know, they're trying to find a comfort level and trying to find to make sure that it's the right situation academically and obviously from a football aspect, and just trying to be authentic and genuine in everything we do. I'm not going to, lie or smokescreen anybody. I'm just going to be a real guy. And as I tell all the recruits I talk to, I'm not a sales guy. I'm a football guy. So I'm just trying to make sure that they're comfortable with the situation. But recruiting is an interesting game, and trying to assess talent. There's a lot of good football players out there.
How early do you get into it? Like, how early do you start looking at a guy and maybe making contact with a guy, Scott?
Yeah, I don't think it's an ever really ending process. I think that it's never ending, to be honest with you. It goes constantly. Obviously, there's blackout periods where you can't contact mm-hmm. athletes, but you're constantly evaluating and looking at your roster and looking at down the road. Hey, where do I project this guy 2-3 years down the road? You're not always right, and there's going to be some that you don't project that are going to surprise you. But I think that, sometimes, you never really know an athlete at 13, 14 years old, but when they hit 16, 17, I think you got a pretty good idea of kind of the athleticism and where you can somewhat project them as a football player. And then it's just a matter of getting to know them. And that's a big part of it for me is, you can watch a lot of tape, but I want to get to know you as a person and see how important football is to you and see if you've got the work ethic and the desire that you're going to put into this game, to reap all the benefits of it. But it's a lot of work that you got to put in.
You talked about Lacombe on the corner. He was a nice addition, but you also had a guy. I was at your last regular season game. Unfortunately, didn't go the way you wanted, but Shaq Harris had a breakout party there.
Yeah, no, Shaq's he's a dynamic young player. I remember, I was involved, obviously, recruiting him last year, and he's a really good dynamic player. And that's one of those things as a young guy, you got to find the balance between throwing him in the fire too early and losing confidence and making it overwhelming to bring in a guy along to where he's in a confident situation. Shaq's not short on confidence, and he's not short on skill either. He's a really good complimentary tailback for us, and he did some wonderful things. And it's exciting for guys like that, they are what you thought they would be, and just looking at the potential down the road is really exciting in developing young athletes.
You were 2-6. Where do you got to be to get better in your personnel? What areas do you have to shore up, do you think, to compete with the big boys?
Everywhere, to be honest with you. We've got to get better in every position. I mean, our record is unacceptable, and we will be better in all phases, from coaching to players to everything. I think that it was, like I said, I think one of the biggest things is the physicality and the physical approach to being bigger, faster, stronger, and being where we need to be to compete from a physical standpoint. And listen, we've got some really good, outstanding young players on this roster, and we were a very, very young football team. We were 65% of our roster is in the first or second year. So, we've got some growing to do, and it's exciting moving forward and being able to augment that with some pieces here and there and being able to grow and develop guys. And that's really what it's about, for us here is getting that, especially this off season, to get that development of players. Because a lot of our guys that come in, they're just really good athletes, and they play a lot of different sports. They're not super concentrated on football. at 15, 16 years old, and being able to get them in and integrate and develop their football skills is important for us.
You talk about having a young roster. Do you look at you know, like when you're sizing up a roster, do you look at kind of the skill positions where you can go younger, and then maybe your line and the I like to call them the manlier position, so to speak, without trying to offend anybody. But, you know, the linemen, would you look at maybe shoring it up with some junior guys? Or are you going with just a young mentality and we want to grow these guys together?
Yeah, well, it's different. I think every athlete has their own path. Some guys like to go junior. Some guys come right out of high school. It's different, I think, different path for every athlete. I mean, for me, I'm looking at some of the top young talent, not only obviously in Saskatoon and the province, but across the country. And I personally like to grow and develop players, because I think that there's an adjustment period to be made wherever you go, and to make a couple adjustments throughout your career might not be in the athlete's best interest. And then also, it's also within the system and growing with our coaches and developing with our strength conditioning coaches and growing within the culture of what we've got here. And it's part of that is patience, a big part of that is too, and just finding the right mix of guys that we can grow and develop, because every coach is going to have their own style and every coach is going to want something a little bit different. So that development key portion of it is key for us, and to get guys integrated into the system as quickly as possible.
I'm going to ask you a question about your quarterbacks. You kind of have a 1A and a 1B there in Kyle Siemens, who's I like to call him a gamer, and then you got Mason Nias, kind of the gunslinger, the young guy that comes with the resume. You talk about patience. Last year when you took over the job, much like your mentor, Mark Trestman, he took over the job in Toronto and said, Ricky Ray is my guy. When you took over the Huskies, you said, Kyle Siemens is the starting quarterback. He's the guy. I'm not saying you're going to, you know, I don't put words in your mouth. I guess what I'm getting at is you're patient with guys. You don't want to rush them. But might we see you take the wraps off of Mason Nias a little bit more this year if the game presents itself? Because in one half of football against the U of A, he threw for over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. I know that had a lot of fans talking in the stands when I was at your game against Manitoba.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I think that we know what Mason is capable of. And Kyle knows I've been absolutely upfront with both him and Mason on what I expect from the quarterback position and what I want to see. And at the end of it, we're judged on wins and losses. And the quarterback is the most important position in football. It absolutely is. So, yeah, there's going to be great competition there over the off season, and then we'll see where it goes. But you know, they're both outstanding young men. First off, they're both great leaders on our football team inside of our locker room. And I think Kyle knows what Mason can do, and Mason knows what Mason can do, and I think that we do as well. And the future is really, really bright for that young man. You know, it's exciting, the fact that we know that we've got these two outstanding competitors on our roster, and just that competition will make them both better.
Okay, last question for you, Scott Flory. Okay, yeah. What does Scott Flory need to do to be better for next year to do his part to improve the 2-6 record?
Absolutely, and that's I've got to be better at assessing our team. I've got to be better at individually coaching our guys better, putting them in better positions schematically, and making sure that I find that balance amongst our coaches and giving them the ability to do their job, but also having my input on it. You're right. There's a lot of things that I've noticed that I need to do better at, assessing our leadership core and empowering our athletes to be better leaders, in the locker room and on the football field. And, you know, there's a lot of aspects that I know that I have to be better at that I will be at moving forward. I mean, it's I'm young in my coaching career, mm-hmm. no excuse, but it is, and you learn a lot day to day in this job, and learn a lot coaching day to day, and it's exciting coming to work every day.
Well, let me just end it like this. I don't want you leaving this interview thinking I said you needed to be better. Maybe I need to be better as an interviewer. I said, what do you think you need to be better at? I you know what? Coming in late, it's never easy coming in late. I'm not making excuses for you, but it's never easy coming in late. You got a young roster, and I mean, you got to be honest here. It's a violent sport. You guys had a lot of big time injuries this year too, which I know you don't like to use as an excuse, but I mean, that's the reality of it.
Yeah, and that just comes back to building the depth. It does, where we don't have you know, injuries are going to happen in football. Every team goes through it where it's not, where it's a, you know, you've got starters for a reason, and understandably it's a, maybe it's a little bit of a small step down to the guy behind you. But when, to building that depth and being able to develop our guys where it's, where it isn't so, so catastrophic for us. And that's my job. And that's what we have to do as coaches, is to build that better. And we will be better for it moving forward. I absolutely believe that. And this, you know, hopefully we have a great recruiting class and that can build a foundation of the team that we want to see moving forward.
That's the good young head coach of the U of S Huskies, Scott Flory. Thanks for this, Scott.
Appreciate it, Michael. Anytime.
Thanks to my guests on the Growing the Game podcast, Rob Vanstone from the Regina Leader Post, and of course you just heard from U of S Huskies head coach Scott Flory. Before I get out of here, I want to give a nice shout out to the U of R Rams. They had their awards banquet this week, and Atlee Simon, who holds basically every rushing record in the Rams record books, has been chosen as the MVP by his teammates. A well-deserved honor. This guy is definitely next-level worthy. I'm looking forward to his draft status and what he decides to do going into next year if he's going to play his fifth and final year with the University of Regina Rams. Also wanted to point out one of the guys that played 8 years with the Rams did a great job emceeing the banquet alongside Mitch Pickton. It was Frankie Gray, former Campbell Tartan, spent 8 years with that football team and is a good all-around guy. He definitely will be missed in that locker room. Hey, we've reached 14 episodes of the Growing the Game podcast. We're hoping for many, many more. We need you, though, to spread the word and tell everybody about this podcast. If you have any story ideas, why don't you contact me at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. If you'd like to sponsor, hit up the same email address, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Hope to talk to you real soon.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.